From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
You bet. It's hard for doctors to unlearn things, you know? I mean, sometimes they're pretty stubborn. But it's some very important issues about how new medical information comes out, which means we're doing the wrong thing. How long does it take doctors to do the right thing? And then we're going to talk about alcohol. A new study, maybe no level of alcohol is safe for you? Wondered who sponsored this. Could it have been the New England Puritans? We'll find out. Not the New England Patriots, the New England Puritans.
Or the soda pop
makers. The soda pop manufacturers. That's right. Or the water people. And then Chipotle chicken mango salad, a delicious recipe that would go really well with a glass of wine. But we won't talk about that. Okay. We won't talk about that.
Then let's get to the phones now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Welcoming our first caller now in Oostburg, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow I'm 74. I wake up with stiff, painful knees, tight, and they get worse through the day to the point where they're heavy and plodding. Now, I realize 74... Well, people tell me that's an advanced age, and I have had both knees replaced in 2014 and a spine laminectomy and spine fusion, but nonetheless, I want to go, especially on grand days like this.
Well, I got to tell you, by the way, that 74 is not an advanced age.
Exactly what I was thinking of. That's exactly. In America, there is no such thing as an advanced age. Maybe when you reach the age of 90, but certainly not the age of 74.
Yeah.
But arthritis does relate to your age. I mean, unless you have rheumatoid arthritis or some other rheumatological condition, the older you get, the more your joints ache. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of what it is. And seriously, if you've had a couple of joints replaced, clearly you've got some significant arthritis there. What do you take for it?
Well, I've got Tamulosin, which is, I understand, a pain medicine.
No. Tamulosin is not. That's for your prostate. That's the medicine you take to make sure you pee okay.
Okay, Tramadol.
Tramadol is a very interesting painkiller. And a full disclosure, for years when I did clinical research, we did a couple of trials with Tramadol for Johnson & Johnson when they owned the patent on the drug. Now the drug is actually a generic, pretty inexpensive. And it's a little bit kind of like an opioid, a little bit like an antidepressant. It can be very useful for pain. It's not an anti-inflammatory, and it's not a Tylenol. So you take Tramadol. What else do you take?
Well, acetaminophen.
Okay.
And actually, Dr. Zorba, I don't really recognize improvement from either drug.
Mm-hmm.
I take them because they've been assigned to me, and that's what I do.
Let's talk about that for a second. And let's talk about the word assignment, because I think that's really a good word to use. And really kits in with what we're going to be talking about later in our office. When a physician or a nurse practitioner or a PA recommends something, it's a recommendation. The real question is you then have to decide, is it good or it's not good? Now, with the opioid crisis in Wisconsin, it was a big issue. We have to get people off of opioids and decrease it. Government came in. I didn't like the government coming into my office and telling me how to handle my medical care. But in the end, they were right. And we have a number of patients in our office, a lot of patients that are off opioids or on a decreased amount of opioids. I had one woman who said was taking it one tablet twice a day. She had lots of problems with her joints. When she stopped, I asked her how pain was, and she said about the same. She had been on the medicine from me for more than a dozen years, and we thought the medicine was helping her. It wasn't doing anything. So the answer is, if you don't feel that Tramadol and the acetaminophen is doing anything, stop it, period. You're not going to do yourself any harm. But What I would recommend is trying a regular dose of acetaminophen. I'm going to go back to part of that. And I like arthritis strength Tylenol generic. And I use the word Tylenol because acetaminophen is too big a word. Tylenol is a small word. That's why Johnson & Johnson trademarked it, because it sounded like a good word to them 40 years ago, and it is. Now, the tablets are 650 milligram tablets. They're 8-hour tablets versus regular Tylenol. Big, big difference. Who can take a pill every 4 hours? Only the people with obsessive compulsive disorder can do that. And there are not many of them. The reality is every 8 hours you can do it. Once in the morning when you get up, once a night when you go to sleep, and then you take it in the middle of the day sometime if you're bothered. So I recommend 1 to 2 tablets in the morning when you get up, 1 to 2 tablets when you go to sleep at night, and then middle of the day, if you ache, you take another 2 tablets. That's what you try. Take that 24/7 for 2 weeks. Every single day. 2 tablets in the morning, 2 tablets around lunchtime, 2 tablets at bedtime. Do it for 2 weeks. See how you feel. Then you'll know if the drug's doing something. That's your assignment that I give you.
Thank you, doctor.
Be sure to call us when you reach a really advanced age.
You got it. That's exactly it.
When you give us a call back.
Okay. I'll see you on the tennis court.
There. Thanks a lot.
800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, it says here it's hard for doctors to unlearn things.
Well, this is a rather interesting issue. Came out of the pediatrics literature, JAMA Pediatrics, and I think it's really important. And it was looking at unlearning behaviors. In other words, telling people, you know, not doing things. So, for instance, in pediatrics, antidepressants are given too often to children. They're appropriate, but sometimes they're given too often. We induce deliveries early when we really shouldn't be waiting for nature to kick in. We get x-rays of ankles when we know we really don't have to get x-rays of ankles, a whole bunch of things. And they look specifically at an issue that had to do with blood sugar. So the theory was, in around 2001, that having tight control of blood sugar, especially in the intensive care unit, would produce better outcomes. Kind of makes sense. Get your blood sugar under good control so your body will do a good job. It'll work properly. And this was because of a study, kind of a medium study, not a really small study, not a little big study. But later studies showed it wasn't very good. So, for instance, when you get tight control of blood sugar, you're more likely to get hypoglycemia, right, where your blood sugar is too low. And lo and behold, there was severe hypoglycemia, severely low blood sugar, in the tight group. It was 6.8% versus, this is in the next study, in the group that was usual care, not tight, which was like 0.5%. Big difference, 7%. Of the people were getting hypoglycemia versus negligible not getting hypoglycemia. It took 8 to 9 years before it changed the behavior of physicians. Study after study after study showed too tight blood sugar wasn't good for you. You should get sort of moderate blood sugar. But doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs are less likely to change. Now, there's something interesting. Medicare guidelines came in that had to do with blood sugar. And Medicare guidelines said after the age of 65, 65 is kind of a random line. It's not as if when you're 65, automatically you're older, and when you're 64 and 10 months, you're younger. But over the age of 65, Medicare said we should not shoot for a hemoglobin A1C, that's an average blood sugar of 7, we should shoot for 8. But yet, a lot of endocrinologists, a lot of nurse practitioners, a lot of PAs, and a lot of doctors said, no, wait a minute. We think that tight blood sugar is better because we think, no evidence that it's really better metabolically. Meanwhile, we never think about hypoglycemia or low blood sugar. That is still going on in many practices in America today, where people are getting blood sugar that is too tight when they're over the age of 65 because doctors have been taught that tight blood sugar is really the way to go. It's hard to change physician behavior, even in the light of good science.
Yeah. How do doctors handle this when things change, when we get new? You're good at this because you're on the radio and you are kind of forced to keep up with things.
Right.
Most doctors...
Well, it's a very difficult thing because what happens is a study will come out and then there'll be a guideline, an insurance guideline. So I'm going to take a little bit more about this Medicare thing. Then physicians and groups are then given, they're given like star ratings. And they're given star ratings based on their hemoglobin A1C. The lower the hemoglobin A1C, the better the star rating. It means you're keeping your diabetics in good control. So the insurance companies and the star ratings for this are then behind the science that shows that we're keeping people too tight. So on one hand, you get a better star rating if you keep the blood sugar too low. On the other hand, it's bad for your patients. It's a complicated system. And you know what? I don't have the answer.
Who gives out the star rating?
The insurance companies give out star ratings. What they do is they say, you're doing a better job because you're taking your diabetics and you're working on their blood sugar to keep it down. But they're not. They're behind in saying, well, here's the over the 65 group and the under the 65 group. And then this is related to when people actually sign up for the insurance. They'll go, well, maybe I'll do this plan. They're doing a better job with diabetics. So you've got a whole bunch of things working against changing behavior in physicians. Also, they look at a bunch of studies and they go, there's too many studies going out. When do I change my behavior? Mm-hmm. So there's no clear answer on what we should do.
Well, I say kudos to the doctors because most of them are pretty good, right? They
absolutely.
Keep up with it.
Absolutely. But the fact is, this particular study showed doctors don't change behaviors as quickly as they should.
800-462-7413 is our number. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener is with us in Williamsville, New York. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I'm interested in whether the doctor has an opinion on the drug Prevacin. It's advertised heavily. I don't know if any real statistics are out on it, but I'm curious to know whether it may be like a chicken soup. It won't hurt, and it might help.
Prevacid, there's a drug Prevacid that's a PPI.
Prevagen, it's the memory.
Oh, thank you. Prevagen. Okay, Prevagen. Because yes. Prevacid is for your stomach. Mm-hmm. So Prevagen. And you've seen these advertised.
What is Prevagen for?
I have no idea. Some kind of a, something to improve your memory.
Memory, short-term memory. They give a little graph on the TV ad that tells you, how you've improved in 80 days as opposed to 20 days. And I'm just curious about it, whether it's worth taking, not worth taking.
Well, first of all, there's nothing that improves your memory that you can take. So first off, this is stuff that's on late-night TV. When do you see the ads?
Oh, it's all day long, I'm just curious about it.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about memory. And first of all, save your money. Let me be very specific about it. There is no drug to improve your memory. No drug at all. There's no drug that scientifically has shown your memory gets better, from ginkgo biloba to this baloney drug called Prevagen. It's garbage. Hmm. That's what it is. Save your money. They'll do something. I had one patient who got something like this for their bowels, and they said it's free. And then they got a bill for shipping and handling, which was $70. Hmm. So the drug was free, and shipping and handling was $70.
Shipping wasn't.
Well, that's exactly. I mean, it's an example of how they want to take your money.
Yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about memory that's interesting. So I go to a trainer. I'm in a university environment. The trainers are always in their 20s. They're like 20, 21, 22. And I find it very interesting because I find that my trainer and all the trainers I've had in the last decade, they periodically forget things. They go, God, I forgot to do this. And I was with my trainer actually a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I can't remember which key opens this door. He has a whole bunch of keys, and he had to go through like five keys to open the door. He never thinks about his memory as deficient based on age. He just goes, I can't remember the key. And then we as adults, older adults, go, oh, you've got too much on your mind. I don't know what that means. What is too much on your mind? You're thinking about other things. Memory is erratic. Memory is erratic. But the way to improve your memory is by using your memory. There is no doubt about that. Well, then, a lot of people say do crossword puzzles. Well, I have a little dyslexia. I don't know how to spell things. I got Microsoft Word years ago, so it would correct my spelling. The last thing in the world I will do is a crossword puzzle. I haven't done one since high school. It will never happen. But I do improve my memory for other things, and that's where you should put your money in. So there's something called a memory castle. And a memory castle is where you picture a room that's very familiar to you, and then you try to remember things in that room, like in the store. Like you're going to the store, and you want to pick up pickles, you want to pick up ice cream, and you put that in your memory room. And when you go to the store, you don't take your list. You use your memory to try to find things. Mm. And what happens is you improve your memory through using your memory. And television doesn't improve your memory at all. But reading does, because you use your imagination. So what you want to do is do memory things. And the memory things online, I think they have a chance of working. Don't take a pill. Do games and things like that. How old are you, by the way?
83.
You sound like you're in your 50s. You don't sound like you're in your 80s at all.
Yeah.
How's your memory?
My memory's pretty good.
Pretty good.
I'm interested in it, though, because it's on everyone's mind.
Yeah, it's on everyone's
You're
mind.
You're getting older, and, yeah, you know, if you
It's on everyone's mind as you get older.
Something from the store, you think, oh, now is it starting?
No. But the reality is, a lot of people go to the store and forget things. I see these 20-year-olds. They forget things all the time. And whenever a 20-year-old forgets something, I know my memory is good.
Yeah, they make you feel better, right?
You bet you, Schadenfreude. So
yeah.
Well,
okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
We appreciate the call from where are you from again?
Wittenville, New York.
Oh yeah. From
14221.
Our number is 800-462-7413. I will never forget that number.
Not Williamsville. It's on my mind.
Before we take a break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email came to us from a listener named Joy. She writes, "Howdy. For a change, I'd like to cite Tom for a grammatical felony. Now, nobody loves Tom. Nobody loves Tom's charming Midwestern drawl more than me. In fact, when I listen to him, I often close my eyes and imagine myself in a saloon in Dead Man's Gulch, drinking a shot of whiskey as the cattle go by. But every week, multiple times in a show, I hear Tom saying, send us an email at... with Zorba appending Zorba at WPR.org. Dear Tom, we don't send anything at. We send things to. For example, we send rockets to the moon and not at the moon. This is really grinding my gears. I'm sure that archetype of good grammar, Dr. Zorba, would agree.
He certainly would
have, because he's been laughing at me during this whole evening.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you want to respond?
No,
even
you're right.
Even me. And
they're
why,
right.
Why would you?
For once, or maybe twice, maybe more than that, they are correct.
Did you catch
Send an email to, not send an email at.
Did you catch a mistake we made? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email to.
But you know, it's the at symbol on the keyboard. That is the other part of it. You're sending an email with the at symbol.
I can't use
you
that.
The
I can't,
with
use,
a little
I can't use that as
it.
An excuse.
No, you
I've
can't.
Never seen a keyboard.
That's right. WPR.org. Or don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
More calls to come as
or is
well
it
as
at Facebook.
We'll have our tasty recipe too, right here on Zorba
or
Pastor
is it
and your help.
Facebook.
From PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
By Facebook.
Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, chipotle chicken mango salad.
Right. Now, this uses boneless, skinless chicken breast, which in many ways is really the worst part of the chicken. I mean, it's the most tasteless part. It's usually dried out often when you get it. It doesn't have the flavor of dark meat. It has a, it can be thick. It can be a texture. I mean, there are a lot of problems with boneless,
skinless.
You're talking
about chicken breast?
Yeah, boneless, skinless chicken. It has, yeah. Yeah. Do you like boneless,
skinless
chicken breast?
Oh. What are you talking about?
Oh, wow. You mean this is something, oh, my goodness. This is something you say you love. So you get, you always get boneless, skinless chicken breast when you go?
Well, whatever comes in that package.
In that package. Yeah, that's right. That you open up. But I mean, but you have to add flavor to it. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I
you have to add, you have to add flavor to it. This adds flavor to it. So it's a very interesting recipe with that. Now, the other thing that was interesting, I went to a restaurant the other day, and I got a sandwich. I thought, I don't want a salad. So I think of salads globally as having, you know, not having a lot in it. You know, for some reason, I think of it as my mother's salad. I think that's still stuck in my brain, which was iceberg lettuce, maybe a tasteless tomato in the wintertime. You're smiling because you know what I'm talking
about.
Been there. If you're really going far out, you'll have some cucumber in there. But, you know, you might have a little cucumber in there. You know, and then it's like Kraft salad dressing of some sort. I mean, that's what I think of. But so I'm sitting at the restaurant, and I ordered a lamb burger because I kind of like lamb. And then I looked around and realized people were having all sorts of things in their salad. So instead of having bread with the protein of choice, they had salad with the protein of choice. And it dawned on me that I have been prejudiced against salads.
Wow.
Prejudiced against salads. I associate that as, oh, there are salads, and then there's everything else, which is the good stuff.
Yeah.
And in fact, we're wrong. There are lots of things that you can put into salad. This is a good example, because the protein of choice here is boneless, skinless chicken breast, which is a really good source of protein, which is low fat, which really, when you make it good, can taste delicious. And this is a delicious salad, chipotle chicken mango salad.
Let's do it.
It's one of the first times that I saw your eyes light up when we talked about chicken breast. So, start out with two boneless, skinless chicken breasts.
Two boneless and skinless chicken breasts.
Okay, and here's your spice. This is your spice package. Well, not a package, but your spices. 1 teaspoon of ground chipotle.
1 little tea ground chipotle.
1/4 teaspoon of ground cumin.
1/4 little tea ground cumin.
1/4 teaspoon of ground cayenne pepper.
1/4 little tea ground cayenne pepper.
1/2 teaspoon of salt.
1/2 tea salt.
Okay, you're gonna get some olive oil. On the chicken, you're gonna use 1 tablespoonful of olive oil.
Big T olive oil.
Okay, so that's good. That's gonna be the chicken part. Now we're gonna go to the salad part, and I'm gonna tell you how you put it together. 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big T olive oil.
Juice from a lime. Do not use reconstituted lime juice, folks. It does have a place, but not ever in a recipe. There is no comparison.
Juice
from a lime. And by the way, the reason that we call perishables perishable is because they're perishable, which means you periodically are going to have a dead lime in your refrigerator.
Yep.
I'm going to use some salt, of course. 1/4 teaspoon, if you want to, 1/4 of it, rather, a jalapeno pepper diced. You could use a whole one. My wife, Penny, would always use a whole one or two, but some jalapeno.
Jalapeno diced.
A diced avocado.
Diced avocado.
A mango. So remember, this is mango. When mangoes are in season, diced.
Diced a mango.
And you can get mangoes. Mangoes have become much more plentiful than they used to be. I mean, you can find them in a variety of stores now. And 2 cups of arugula.
2 cups of arugula. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
A dumb question?
Yeah, a smart question.
How do you dice something?
Well, you take it and you make it into little squares. That's all. You're basically taking it, chopping
it up. Into little
Mincing. Yeah, okay. Mincing means it's really, really tiny. Dicing is a term that means it's bigger. And I'm sure there's an absolute definition of dice. And if I had, you know, Mother Google or Father Google with me, I would tell you. But basically, dice means they're in little small pieces.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, dice. Okay, let's make the chicken. Sprinkle both sides. By the way, that was a good question. That is a good question.
Coming from me, comparatively good.
I mean, you know, I think what happened is the chicken breast excited you so much that you asked about the recipe. And I think the last recipe you actually asked about was about a decade ago. Yeah. It was about 10 years ago you asked about the recipe.
You have to be really dumb for somebody to say it's a good question when I ask how do you dice something.
And you were just drinking a glass of water when I said that was good, and you almost spit out the water. It was so funny. It was ridiculous.
Okay, put this all together.
Yeah, I got to stop laughing first. Okay. All right. Sprinkle both sides of the chicken with the ground chipotle, cumin, cayenne, and salt. And you got to mix that mixture together when you're doing it. I would mix them all together. In a medium pan, set over medium heat, put the little olive oil that you're going to put in, a tablespoonful or so. When the oil is warm, add the seasoned chicken, cooked for 5 to 7 minutes on each side. Transfer to a cutting board. Let it rest. You got to let it rest for 5 minutes for the juices to go back in. Not a lot of juice in there, so you have to do that. Now, in a large bowl, and once again, we're making a mango salad, but you could do this with any salad. Add the olive oil, lime juice, very important, a few pinches of salt. Whisk it until it's combined. If you want some heat, you add the jalapeno. If you've got an avocado, add the avocado. If you've got the mango, it is called mango salad, but you could do it without it. Add the diced mango, and then add the arugula. And if you don't have arugula, use another green. Toss it together until it's cooked. Divide it among the bowls, slice up the chicken, add the chicken to the top of the salad, and voila, you've got a delicious, interesting salad. It'll serve four people, and it's tasty. Mm-hmm. And you like it.
Yeah, and if I wanted to get a copy of this recipe.
Well, you could go to the internet. That's at, am I supposed to say to or at Zorba at WPR, the little ant sign at Zorba at WPR.org, or you can find us through FACEBOOK.
Okay. Now, let's get to the phones. We have a caller or two. Our first one is Waukesha, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help?
I am calling about migraines. I have had migraines 2 times in my life, when I am my late teens. And at that point, I was put on a daily medication. I believe it was a beta blocker. Mm-hmm. And then something to take. It was a really large pill to take if I still got a migraine.
Okay.
And then after some time, it got better. And I figured, oh, good, I'm done with these things. Mm-hmm. Well, about 10 years ago, I started to have them again. And I went to see my doctor, who recommended a low-dose beta blocker. I was concerned because I have very low blood pressure for my age. Uh-huh. And he felt like that was not a problem, that those would not mess around with my blood pressure. And I mentioned that I noticed that when these migraines, the later ones, these ones, they also come with visual distortions, like squiggly. Sure. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes I had eaten chocolate around the same time, and that it seemed to disappear. Mm-hmm. Well, the doctor didn't like the suggested chocolate idea, and he gave me the beta blocker. But I am allergic to a couple of medications, and I don't want to expose my body to anything I don't need. Mm-hmm. Sure. And then I really did not like the way I felt.
On the beta blocker.
On the beta blocker. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of times while I was on the beta blocker, I started to pay attention. And if I had chocolate, the darker, the better. Mm-hmm. When the migraine just started, as I could see the visual distortions, it would work like magic. Well, I went off the beta blocker to my doctor's upset. Mm-hmm. And I have managed my migraines with dark chocolate for about 6 years.
Oh, interesting.
And I wonder, Sorva, if you have heard about this before.
No, I have to tell you, first of all, what's interesting is for many people, chocolate triggers the migraine. That's a common trigger for migraines, are chocolate. So a lot of people can't tolerate chocolate because they get migraines. And then they go through grieving because they can't eat chocolate. But they can't have chocolate in their lives. And they have to choose, if I have chocolate, I'm going to get a migraine, but I really want to have the chocolate. But for you, it works in the opposite way. We know that migraines are individualized. We know that there are some people who can tolerate things, some people that don't tolerate things. Beta blockers can be very useful. There are other drugs also that you can take on a regular basis. But once again, they have side effects. Like you say, if you have low blood pressure and you take a beta blocker, you may feel really washed out, like you're just not getting enough. Other, by the way, prophylactic things that you can do for migraines are a daily aspirin will work for some people, a daily naproxen or ibuprofen will work for other people, Excedrin migraine once or twice a day will work. There's a drug called Topamax that's a seizure drug that works. But you've discovered a natural way to take care of it. And I would stay with it. But it works the opposite. You're weird. It works the opposite of everybody else. I'm sorry. You're weird. You know, what can I say? You were built backwards. The chocolate takes away migraines versus causing migraines.
I shouldn't be surprised. I've known that for a while.
Well, you've just spread the word that for the weird people of the world, take chocolate and you'll get rid of migraines. But I've never heard of that before, but you know I can never say that again because I've heard of it now.
And it's worth a try.
And it's worth a try. And it works. And it's not a drug and it's not a red beta blocker. So thanks for sharing that with us. And I think you bring up an important point. It's dark chocolate, so it probably has a higher rate of cacao. We know cacao seems to work to prevent heart attacks, interestingly. It may be strokes. And it may be that it works on the endothelium, which is the inside lining of the small arteries, the medium-sized arteries in the brain. And that may be how it works. It may work in the same way that it works to prevent heart disease. So keep eating the chocolate, and good luck on the calories. That's the only bad side effect. So.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for calling. We really appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, I wasn't sure if she would take weird as an insult, but I didn't mean it as an insult, and she did not take it as an insult.
She's used to listening to the show, and she understands.
She knows that I'm weird. Yeah. I'm weird. That's right.
1-800-462-7413, our number. 800-462-7413. Now before the break, Zorba, let's fire up our newest segment on the show, where you, Zorba, a real-life doctor, clarify something a listener has read on the internet.
Versus a virtual doctor.
We call it Google Doc. The following email came to us from a listener named John in Buffalo, New York. He writes, Dr. Pastor, I am 67 years old, and I give blood on a regular basis throughout the year. I read somewhere that donating blood on a regular basis is good for the body, something having to do with giving the body's iron stores a boost. Is this actually true?
No, it's not true. First of all, you're not giving the iron stores a boost when you're taking iron out of the body with the blood. So you're not boosting anything when you're actually doing it. And there's no evidence that giving blood helps you make blood. It's just that when you give blood, your body has to make more blood. I mean, think of giving blood as bloodletting, which is an ancient and old-fashioned practice. But no, it's not true.
Did you read something online that you're not quite sure about? Zorba's here to clarify the clickbait. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba. Or is it an email too? Zorba@WPR.org. I still don't know if it's that or two. Or Facebook, of course. And I'm going to wear my Google hat one of these days.
Were you impressed by my knowing what clickbait?
Absolutely. In fact, I thought clickbait. You know, you are no longer a Luddite if you're using clickbait.
I'm sorry. I'm still a Luddite. More of your calls coming up. Another interesting topic to talk about right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, it says here there is no safe level of alcohol.
Right, right. I want to go over this study because I think it's interesting. It really wasn't done by the Puritans in the Massachusetts Bay Country Society or whatever it was. It's from the journal Lancet, which is a very prestigious journal. And this basically was a study of studies looking at what's going on with alcohol, how much death does it actually cause. And I want to talk about not the benefits of alcohol, first of all, that I think may still be there that the study does not address, but the fact that they said a lot of people die from alcohol-related injuries. For instance, road injuries, it is a big issue. Self-injuries, self-harm, bar fights, tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. It's really a major thing with tuberculosis. Lots of alcohol-related deaths. And they estimate that it contributes to death maybe in up to one quarter of the people in one way or another.
Well, not many of us have bar fights.
No, but if you have to look at the age of what it occurs, bar fights do not occur. You, because you're a senior citizen. But when you're in your 20s, I was careful, Tom. I did not say it. But when we look at it globally, they look at, as you increase the amount of alcohol, you increase your risk of death from these other things, cancers and other things that are caused, liver failure and so on. But they don't address the issue of alcohol and heart disease. They do say, we don't think that alcohol is protective, even though there are numerous studies that have shown that. And the Lancet said, this study really shows that there is no protective amount of alcohol that's good. But we have to look at the society issue. Alcohol, since it was first invented by humans, has been with us and will continue to be with us forever. It's not going to stop being with us. And teetotalers, although they have an issue and it's worthwhile, are a vast minority of the population. Most people drink a drink or maybe two drinks a time. But I think this really looks at the fact that there are health issues. The editorial said it's the most comprehensive estimate of the global burden of alcohol, and it's clear and unambiguous. Alcohol is a colossal global health issue, and small reductions make a difference. Well, they do if you're drinking too much.
So I shouldn't have a little wine once or twice a week?
I disagree with the study, and I don't think it's once or twice a week. I think that one drink a day is fine and safe and may still be beneficial and salubrious to the body. And I disagree with this study in The Lancet. But I think once you get over one drink a day, on an average, maybe that's when you run into problems. Certainly with women, once you go over one drink a day, we know that two drinks may be too much. So I think that glass of wine or Wisconsin craft beer, maybe with a bit of hops, is just fine.
1-800-462-7413, our number, 800-462-7413. Back to the phone, Zorba. A listener is with us now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have had a rotator cuff surgery about 7 weeks ago. I'm down to 2 Tylenol, 500 milligrams a day, one in the morning with breakfast and one before bedtime. Now, I've been told that you shouldn't take acetaminophen or ibuprofen on an empty stomach. So I'm having a piece of toast before I take that dosage in the evening. Is that enough, or should I add a little glass of milk or something with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you can take acetaminophen on an empty stomach.
Oh.
Number one, acetaminophen on an empty stomach, just fine. So you have several different classes of over-the-counter drugs. First of all, you have acetaminophen, class by itself, easy on the stomach, does not have to be taken with food. Then you have aspirin. Aspirin is an anti-inflammatory, very special, should be taken with food if your stomach bothers you. If it doesn't bother you, you don't have to. But aspirin is in a class by itself. It's a special drug. It is an anti-inflammatory by itself. Then you have the NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, not the aspirin, but that's ibuprofen and naproxen, and of course, prescription NSAIDs. And on the whole, they, along with aspirin, might do better with food if your stomach bothers you. There's no evidence that it actually reduces ulcer rate. I don't think there's any evidence of that at all. But a lot of people get an upset stomach unless they take it with food, so If a piece of toast is fine, you could have a quarter of a Snickers if you wanted to have it. It doesn't have to be toast.
A quarter of a Snickers?
Well, I'm not recommending 210 calories of Snickers, but I mean, you're having a piece of toast. Quarter of a Snickers is about the same amount of calories. You could have that. Wouldn't that make you happier? What's your candy bar of choice?
Yes, but...
What candy bar do you like?
Oh, probably Butterfingers.
So have a little Butterfingers with that. I mean, we might as well... I mean, come on, we have to stop being Puritans about this. You have to look at calories and calories.
The other part of this situation is, conversely, some medications tell you to take them on an empty stomach.
Correct. That's right.
First thing in the morning, before breakfast, I understand an empty stomach.
Mm-hmm.
But when do I have an empty stomach after I eat? And
Two hours after you eat. That's generally assumed that 2 hours after you eat is an empty stomach.
That's
kind of the general thing. And for some drugs, they do have to be taken on an empty stomach. And so
The
drug doesn't absorb. Perfect example is Fosamax. Fosamax is a drug used for osteoporosis. People should take it in the morning on an empty stomach, and they have to wait 30 minutes before eating because the body doesn't absorb the drug very, very well. So that's a perfect example where if you take it with food, it ain't going to work. Then there are other drugs such as the tetracyclines, which are a type of antibiotic, where if you take it with milk, it binds to the milk and it doesn't get absorbed. So when it comes to prescription drugs, you do want to talk to your pharmacist about it if you have a question. And so that's really an important issue. But anti-inflammatories, generally, I always use it. Does it bother your stomach at all? Because, once again, I don't know where the evidence is that it actually reduces the risk of a GI bleed, which is sort of part of the issue.
Right. Well, thank you very much. That's really helpful to me then.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah. Thanks
so much for that call. We appreciate it at 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, sometimes a listener will hear you say something they take issue with.
Shocking.
And
I am shocked.
They just can't let it go.
Shocked.
And I should say we absolutely welcome, I do anyway, this healthy exchange of ideas.
Wait a second. You welcome. That's right. I don't want any advice.
Anyway, saddle up now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. The following email came to us from Lori, who listens to the show on KGOU in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She writes, Dr. Zorba, thanks for a great show and usually great info. I was just listening to the gentleman with the teary eye problem. You told him to get some Restasis and that there is a generic...
Right.
Available.
Right.
I was using Restasis.
Right.
Let me finish your email.
I'm sorry. I thought about that after I showed
I had
the
been
show.
Using Restasis, a very expensive prescription with no generic for about 10 years before my insurance company quit covering it. It does not contain glycerin as its main ingredient is cyclosporin.
Right.
Perhaps you meant to say Refresh.
I did.
An over-the-counter glycerin eye drop.
Right. They are definitely correct. And I thought about that after the show. When I was in the car, I thought, I think I said Restasis. I didn't say Refresh. Thank you for correcting that. It is a very expensive drug. It does contain cyclosporin. And I wonder why your insurance company stopped covering it because it cost a ton of money. So thank you for clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. Do you disagree with the good doc? Let us know by posting our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba2. At WPR.org.
Boy, I'm a slow learner.
But maybe they're wrong. It is the at sign.
No, I'm wrong. Cut it out. Okay, I won't make that mistake again.
Maybe.
Do you disagree with a good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email
to Zorba. At WPR.org or on to at by with Facebook.
Our number is 1-800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. 462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, listener with us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi. I have sciatica, and my doctor prescribed gabapentin. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at some of the possible side effects, and I see sleeplessness, irritability, suicidal thoughts. And once you start taking it, you're not supposed to stop, so I haven't taken them.
Let me give you the lowdown, first of all. It's interesting, and what you bring up is a good point. If you look at the side effects of a drug, you will find out there are a whole bunch of side effects in every drug. And, you know, I mean, from aspirin on down, aspirin would never be approved today as an over-the-counter drug. That's for sure. It would definitely be a prescription drug. And you look at, you know, acetaminophen, Tylenol, that was thought to be safe, but in large doses, especially in alcoholics, it causes liver failure. Who knew that until we figured that out? So you always have to benefit the risks and the benefit, and you have to look at the numbers behind it. So, you know, if it's less than 5% or greater than 5%, that's a meaningful thing. You know, if there's a greater than 5% chance of a weight gain, that means something if it's less than 5% or 1%. Gabapentin is a seizure drug that has been used for chronic pain and insomnia for years. In fact, it's not used very much as a seizure drug. When Park Davis, which was bought up by Pfizer, initially started using gabapentin as a seizure drug, there was a neurologist who said, I think I'm going to try it in chronic pain. And lo and behold, turned out to be useful. And the drug turned out to be, you know, a several billion dollar a year moneymaker for Park Davis. And when that went off patent, they used a drug now called Lyrica, which is a little bit different and also works. So I think it's a drug you can stop commonly. I mean, there's a fear that when you stop it, even if you never had seizures, you'll get a seizure. But I think you just taper off the drug if you're on a larger dose. But the drug can be very good for sciatica. It is safer than other drugs such as opioids that we used to give a lot for sciatica. How bad is your sciatica and when does it bother you?
Actually, it's not that bad. It's just that sometimes my sense of balance. Uh-huh. I know I can feel it around the sciatica nerve. It's not pain. It's just like losing coordination.
Uh-huh. Losing coordination so that you fall? Or what do you mean by that?
No, but at times it seems like instead of my knees bending this way, it feels like they're going to bend forward.
Uh-huh. So I want to get back to the doctor. Why would you take the drug if you don't have much pain? You're right, not to take it. Why did your doctor prescribe it? You must have been... Were you complaining about pain then? I mean, that's what it's useful for.
Well, it goes on and off. Uh-huh. I was taking ibuprofen, but it says you're not supposed to take more than 10 days.
Uh-huh. Well, you can take if your kidneys are fine, you can take ibuprofen on a regular basis. Ibuprofen is an excellent drug, and you can take 600 to 800 milligrams 3 times a day if you've got normal kidneys. I mean, that's a commonly used drug that's very good over-the-counter. If you start getting older over the age of 65 or you're a diabetic or you have kidney problems, that's a different issue. But ibuprofen is safe. Remember, when you're reading the over-the-counter bottle, it's doing that because it's saying if you need to have it longer, you should get a medical consultant. It's sort of a CYA thing, cover your butt if something is, you know, is going on. But ibuprofen is a safe drug to use. Gabapentin, by the way, a lot of people take it at bedtime for sleep when they want to use it for sleep or if they're sciatica. They take it intermittently, and you could use that. But I think I'd go to the ibuprofen if that works. I think it's safer and better. And then you don't have to take it every day. I try that. I don't know why what the balance thing is about. I don't think that's necessarily from the sciatica. I'm not sure. That's kind of a different issue. Sciatica usually is pain, but the sciatic nerve does carry sensory nerves that do affect balance.
Uh-huh. Well, I wasn't diagnosed with sciatica. I just looked on the internet and figured that's the closest thing.
Not if you've got a balance problem. I wouldn't say it's sciatica. If you've got a pain problem along the distribution of the sciatic nerve, that's different. But if you have a balance problem, especially if you're falling, you need an evaluation and see what's going on. That's a different issue. How much alcohol do you drink?
Oh, a beer every day, but I never get drunk.
Not lots. Have you ever had your vitamin B12 level checked?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, sometimes if you have a balance problem, it's due to a B12 deficiency. How are your eyes? You have trouble with your eyes or your ears?
Excellent eyes. I mean, I wear reading glasses. But
What do you do for a living?
I'm retired. I'm almost 70.
Uh-huh.
I'll be 70 next year.
Do you walk? Do you exercise?
I ride my bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's walking. That's, I mean, you got to have balance to ride your bicycle. So I don't think you should take the gabapentin unless you have pain. I don't. What you described to me does not sound like sciatica. But ibuprofen is great if you have discomfort. Okay?
Okay. Well, I appreciate your information.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Now, before we head out today, Zorba, let's tackle another listener email. This one came to us from a listener, Linda, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, and Tom, we get so much useful..." sort of an
afterthought.
"We get so much useful information from your program. Thank you heaps. This is concerning bowel movements."
Oh, wow.
"What is the
bowel
difference?"
Bowel movements. I haven't thought
what
about
is,
bowels for
what,
a while.
You haven't heard the real question.
Yeah, but I love bowels.
What is the difference between stinky sinkies and fluffy floaties?
Well, some are stinkies, and fluffy floaties. Fat.
Yeah, sort of.
No,
yeah.
That's what it is. It's fat. No, oh. It's fat. When you have more fat, when you don't digest fat, your poop floats. It's fat. And actually, for people who have fat issues and they have fat malabsorption, they have floaties. And so actually, it has to do with the fat that goes through. I actually have an answer. Were you shocked?
No. Well, you have an answer to everything.
Shocking. Yeah, but it's not always right. But at least this one is right.
Sure it is. Have an interesting question for Zorba. He's all rears.
Oh, God.
Just send it to our Facebook page or send an email
to by with Zorba at WPR.org or Facebook.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.